You're listening to Go Fish with Mike Buck on AM 690, The Fishing Answer. This segment is being brought to you by the Western Pacific Regional Fishery Management Council at wpcouncil.org. And now, troll on in.
The funny thing is, they're not even here, so they're trusting us with passing the message along. And we're not going to troll on in. We might troll on the way out to the grounds to catch some bottom fish, but we're going to talk a little bit about bottom fish today. And another opportunity for you to see all of the different players and stakeholders in this fishery. And as you know, we work with just about everybody. And I was talking to my friend, fishery scientist Malloy Sabater, over at the council last week. And he said, you know, you really ought to reach out and have some guests from NOAA to talk about this whole thing that we've been talking about, which for a while has been the bottom fishery. So this is kind of neat. Benjamin Richards, we're going to call him Ben. He's a PhD. He's a scientist, research fishery biologist, and the lead survey scientist, which puts a big onus of, what do you mean you're the lead scientist? Well, you're the one that has to sign the, I guess, the reports, Ben. And so you know a fair bit about what goes into these things.
Yeah, thanks, Mike. It's a pleasure to be here.
Thanks for joining us. You know, we often try to explain the multi-stakeholders and players that are in this. And I mean, you know, a lot of listeners of this show, they're tide pool guys, or they're dunking for Mampachi in reefs. And what we're trying to do is cover from in and out. And there's a gray area about the area in which we're going to talk about today, and that's bottom fishing, because sometimes people are bottom fishing inside in the DLNR area, right?
Right.
And sometimes outside. Now, the fish, we've already explained, they're not sure where they are.
Exactly. So all the different areas in the ocean that may be important to fish. Yeah. Fish see the ocean very differently than we do as humans.
Yeah. You know, interestingly enough, and I always try to do this, where do you call home? Where did you come from?
So I was born in San Diego, okay. California.
So you're a beach guy.
I am. Yeah. I grew up in Austin, Texas. We moved from San Diego to Austin when I was about 2. Mm-hmm. But I've always had a love for the ocean. I've always had a draw for the ocean.
We're so similar to San Diego, right, in many respects.
Well, yeah. I believe so. Yeah, like yeah. I said, I moved when I was 2, so yeah. I don't remember it so much. But
first
I've visited
couple years
a couple of times.
But interestingly enough, we are often marveled at the magnet that draws people to Hawaii.
Sure.
And obviously, if you're working for an outfit like NOAA, it's everywhere.
True. Yeah.
Is Hawaii a good assignment?
Oh, Hawaii is a wonderful assignment. Yeah, I've been here for about 15 years and really love it.
Yeah, because I do know that there, if you want to move around, you can. I know that when there's going to be an opening at NOAA, or anybody for that matter, any of these federal jobs or even state jobs, that they publish it and you can take a look around. So every now and again you say, that sounds good, but kind of hard to beat where I am, right?
Kind of hard to beat. Yeah, and then, you know, our family's here and, you know, we have a daughter who's 4.5 now and, you know, she was born here, so... Yeah, we're here.
Okay, so that being said, what then brought you into the area of science that you decided to get involved in?
So it was really about exploration when I was really young. You know, like I said, I've always been interested in the ocean. I've always had a draw for the ocean. I was your classical, you know, stereotypical kid that was enamored with Jacques Cousteau and the whole other world under the water.
By the way, I just happened to notice on my way in here today, this is the 30th year of Shark Week.
I did
the
see
the fascination
that.
Of this thing. We'll talk about that a little bit, too, because sharks play into sort of what we do. But you can see it is a big lure, isn't it?
Oh, it's huge. Yeah. I mean, I started scuba diving when I was 15 years old in lakes in central Texas and was just enamored by this whole different world under the sea. And I was always sort of an explorer that wanted to, you know, ask questions and probe the deep.
Okay, now, but after a while, that inquisitiveness or that exploration part probably got down to the nitty-gritty when you decided on a degree and what to get your doctorate in.
That's correct.
What drew you to that?
So I was really trying to answer questions, you know, about the ocean. You know, one of the things as a scientist is we're very comfortable with the idea of I don't know.
Yeah.
And then, you know, that's really catalyzes, you know, all of our future work is trying to find the answers to questions.
I think, I don't want to put words in anybody's mouth, but I think that we are finally waking up in Hawaii a lot of times because we don't have a real dramatic tidal change. We don't see what's happening in other parts of the world and the Pacific that we have mutual concerns, and that usually has something to do with the fishery. So we're talking about, I don't know whether you've got a global warming or all of the things that happen, but you guys take a look at a a microscopic look at the planet from different eyeballs that we have.
True, yeah. I mean, we all see the ocean from different perspectives, and I think that's been one of the really important things about the Bottomfish Survey that we're going to be talking about, is bringing in stakeholders from the scientific community, from the fishing community, to really pool our knowledge to get the best idea of what's going on with the bottom fishery.
You know, when we talk about that, most of this audience worries about new regulations or new closures or new this or that. And some are finally able to grasp through the program and through other things that we've disseminated. And you can get a lot of this at wpcouncil.org, by the way, and go look. But one of the things that that I'm concerned about, or that I'm thinking that we're likely to buy into, is things are changing. We can't deny it. And these particular fish that we're talking about, these bottom fish, not only are they important to our economy, but they're kind of important to the culture. Especially, you're wearing a shirt people can see, nice onaga on there. If you've had any kind of a good year in Hawaii, you better have an onaga on the table.
Right, exactly.
And everybody wants them in the same week. So when once you narrow down your big interest into this, how did you get into this particular project that you're in right now, the bottom fishing?
So I got into this particular project with the bottom fish fishery in 2011. Mm-hmm. And what we realized is that there's been a stock assessment for the Deep 7 bottom fish fishery for many years. And the data going into that assessment is really, really good. Mm-hmm. But there's only one type of data. We've always used what's called fishery-dependent data to inform that stock assessment. And what that means is that we use data that comes out of the fishery, you know, that's reported by
that's
the captains.
That's from us, from the captains.
Yeah, reported by the captains, reported by the dealers.
Certainly the auction's a big player.
Exactly. Yeah. And all of that information, you know, from 1949 to the present, gives us an idea of the status of the bottom fishery. You know, how many fish are being caught each year? What is their size? You know, landings, things of that sort. And what we realized is that, you know, while that data is really good, we're always wanting to improve the data.
Sure.
We're always wanting to make things better.
I want to learn about that because I have some specific questions about some of the tricks and toys that are used today.
Sure.
Which as a fisherman blow me away.
Yeah, so what we wanted to do was we wanted to bring in, you know, start bringing in another data set, which we call a fishery-independent data set. Mm-hmm. And that's from the survey that we're going to be talking about. Because like you know, there are a whole number of things that affect how many fish a particular fisherman may catch that may have to do with how many fish are in the ocean, but may have to do with things like market price, fuel price, what the weather's doing.
Yeah.
So there are a lot of things that can influence catch that aren't necessarily representative of changes in the fisheries.
So that's a great point. Yeah. We really have to hammer that in because before, I mean, it's anecdotal. If you're using catch information by people that are catching, that doesn't tell you what's out there though. That just tells you what got caught.
Yeah, I mean, it over the years as we develop a time series, it's a pretty good predictor of what's out there. But you know, we're scientists; we always like to have a double check. Mm-hmm. So we wanted to bring in another set of data that isn't as affected by some of those market forces, and that is a scientifically designed survey that can give us another picture of what's going on in the bottom fishery to sort of, you know, serve as a double check.
Yeah, you know, I likened it a couple of months ago when we were talking on a similar segment, the homeless point in time comp that is done across the country to find out who needs help from HUD and who needs money to combat homelessness. Because you can put that pretty good definitive data together by having enough people out doing the survey, right? I also know that maybe you're going to explain some of the things that have been done to, instead of being reacting to what got caught or what got reported catching, going out and seeing what's there, which we couldn't do before very accurately. Our technology just wasn't with us. Now it is.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. So as we started developing the survey, we reached out to the local bottom fishing community because we're the scientists. We know how to do, you know, experimental design, things like that. But the fishing community has been out on the water for generations. They know where, you know, a lot of the bottom fish are. They know how to fish. They know what fishing methods work and what don't. So we really started collaborating with the local fishing community to develop a multi-gear survey that would give us a picture of the bottom fish stock here in Hawaii.
Yeah, and that is incredibly important, folks. And that's why we're going to zero in and start talking about this Deep 7 here in a minute. But I think there's also another issue, and that is that, you know, there has been, and I know it's changed dramatically, a reluctance by certain members of the fishing community to share this because You know, I mean, let's go back to the days before GPSs, right? When Papa knew where the mark was, but nobody else knew. And he wasn't going to tell anybody. Not until the day he finally figured out that he's never going to get a boat again. He might tell somebody. But even that wasn't valuable, because sometimes you had to be with Papa on the boat to see the spots that he's talking about. Now, is it harder on the fish that we can go right to that pinnacle and drop our lines, boom, just like that?
Yeah, I mean, it certainly makes things easier to get where you want to go. Mm-hmm. The question is always where you want to go.
Exactly.
And as we all know, bottom fishing is not something for the faint of heart.
Yeah.
It takes a lot more than just knowing where to go.
It's the rock and roll effect we're talking about. A lot of these guys, when we talk with Roy Morioka and many of the other guys that we talk about all the time, Ed Watamura, et cetera, Ed Ibisui, all of these guys. You got to have a pretty good cast iron stomach, because you're going to be doing some serious rocking and rolling when you're catching your fish. And that's a big part of it, isn't it?
Yeah, it certainly is.
What about this? Some of these guys, and we've had them almost all on before, some of these guys have marks and places where as soon as they get there and they put a hook in the water, they know if they're going to stay there or not, and they're going to move. Let's talk about that, how that anecdotal or how that history makes it possible. If you put your equipment down and there's no fish, are you going to think there's no fish in this area, or do we just have to go somewhere else?
Well, that's why it's important that we conduct the survey, not just at one point or mm-hmm. certain points, but we actually have, any given year, we're collecting samples at about 450 locations around the main Hawaiian
Islands.
Now you're talking.
So. In other words, that's not a random sampling by phone where you could have a 41% chance of error.
Right, exactly.
However, I mean, I'm still interested in, we've talked about it before, we've had some of your folks in talking about the people that actually do the number crunching. That mm-hmm. must be fascinating. The
it
programming.
Is. Yeah, it really is. It's really interesting. And the way we design the survey is as you know, Hawaii, the underwater world in Hawaii is not all the same. There are mm-hmm. different habitats in different yeah. areas. There are areas that are, hard bottom, rocky, really complex areas. Yeah. There are areas that are soft sand and mud.
Yeah.
And we know that bottom fish live in different areas. Mm-hmm. They have, just like us, they have particular preferences. And so what we do when we design this survey is we have, very high resolution undersea maps of what the bottom looks like. And then we take our sampling efforts, mm-hmm. if you will, and we go to these various different areas and we collect information on the density of fish in these particular areas.
When you're doing that,
yes.
collecting this density, what technology is the technology of preference now? Are we looking at cameras? Are we looking at, I know there have been some great developments in that area.
There certainly have. Yeah, right now the Bottom Fish Fishery Independent Survey in Hawaii mm. uses two main gears.
Mm.
So we have a multi-gear survey, because each of the gears gives us a slightly different picture of what's going on.
Sure.
So the first gear that we use is the fisherman. So we contract out to bottom fishermen, commercial bottom fishermen in Hawaii. And for the period starting in mid-August through the end of October, they will go out around the main Hawaiian Islands and conduct fishing operations. Mm-hmm. And what we've done is we've divided all of the main Hawaiian Islands into 500 by 500 meter grids. And there happen to be 25,872 grids in
Hawaii. But who's counting?
Right.
Yeah. Wow. And so that's a lot of grids.
It's a lot of grids. Yeah. It's a lot of areas. It's a big state.
Yeah, yeah.
And so what we do is we select a small number of those grids, about 450, and each of the fishermen are assigned certain grids, and they go to a grid and they fish in that grid for 30 minutes, regardless of what they're catching.
Mm-hmm.
If the bite's on, 30 minutes, they got to move.
Right.
If there's nothing biting, they got to read a book for 30 minutes.
Yeah, yeah.
And we worked with the fishermen to design what we call a standard bottom fishing rig to try to, as you know, different fishermen in the Big Island, in Kauai,
everybody's got their own
setup. So we met with all the fishermen to try to design a standardized gear setup that we could use across the islands. And so
everybody's going to, it's the level playing field.
Same level playing field. Yeah, so we wanted to make sure, that if, Lane is fishing in Maui and, Uncle Roy is fishing here and they catch different numbers of fish, we wanted to, do our best to make sure that was actually reflective of different numbers of fish in different areas and not just different fishing techniques.
I think, folks, one of the things you need to learn is that the serious bottom fishermen over the last several years have declined in numbers. It's not because there's a lack of bottom fish. It's that the young people coming up, according to some of the people we talked to, they're just not willing to put up with all of the you-know-what to fish. I mean, you know, not if you can go to the store and buy it. But we're not talking about people that are necessarily commercial. But I understand that most of the people that you're dealing with, these are commercial guys.
These are commercial guys.
Therefore, their effort's going to be a little bit better than a guy that doesn't know what he's doing.
Correct. Yeah, we did want to make sure that, you know, we were using people that knew how to bottom fish. Yeah. And so when they go to these grids and they're spending 30 minutes there, each vessel has two lines. Mm-hmm. Each of the lines has four hooks. All the hooks are the same size. Yeah, yeah. Half of the hooks are baited with squid. Half of the hooks are baited with a fish type bait, an aku and a kule, something like that. And they fish for 30 minutes.
Yep.
So that's how we have a standardized effort metric. And then when they're done, they move on to their next grid. And they'll do that. They'll usually do about, you know, 5 to 6 grids per day. And they'll usually finish their grids within the main Hawaiian Islands within about a 2-month sampling window, depending on, you know, what the wind is doing.
Here's something that we've tried to explain, and maybe you can shed a better light on it. And that is, all bottom fishing are not the same. Different of these deep seven have different habitats and different places they frequent. So when a guy like Roy or Zeke or Dale or anybody goes out, they kind of are targeting the species that they have history on. And so if they put their hooks in the water and they're trying to catch a paca and there's a bunch of gindai, they might say, yeah, you know, this is not happening today. So, but what I'm getting at is, and I think the misunderstanding among maybe listeners and consumers of the fish, that they think a bottom fisherman just goes out and fishes the bottom and catches whatever is there.
Right.
That's not true, is it?
It is not. Certainly the commercial guys, you know, they know what they're going after. Mm-hmm. They know what they want. They know what their market prices are.
Yeah.
They know what the conditions are in any given day. And we see that certainly in the catches that we get. Mm-hmm. And so what we're doing is, for the survey, since we're looking at the whole bottom fish stock, all the deep seven, we're saying, you know, don't worry about market price. Don't worry about, you know, anything. This is what we want you to do.
And wait. Let me tell you why I think that's important, everybody. Because if I were the guy that catches paca, I'm going to go catch paca. I don't want to go catch something else. So what they're doing is they're saying, okay, we're going to tender our expertise and catch what you need catch.
Yeah, what we're saying is in this particular grid, use your expertise, use your knowledge, catch what's there.
Yeah, yeah.
Whether that's onaga, whether that's paca, whether that's ahu, whether that's gindai, you know, catch what's there.
There are some that won't be in the same place as others because of depth and everything else, right? And I know that's figured into it as well.
Yeah. I mean, primarily, you know, the big ones is, you know, the big difference there is onaga and paca. You know, you have onaga, you know, much, much deeper than you typically have paca.
Water, yeah.
Correct.
All you got to do is see the size of that eyeball. It gives you an idea.
Right.
But then there's another thing. And I do know that there's some that have been, you know, clinging to let us fish. And I, from what I'm understanding, some of the recent surveys that you have conducted indicate that the fishery is maybe a little stronger than it was originally perceived. Maybe there are some people a decade or two ago that were claiming doom and gloom, and in actual fact, it's not that bad in some species and in some areas.
Yeah, certainly the most recent bottom fish stock assessment that just came out for 2018 indicates that the stock is not overfished and is not currently experiencing overfishing. So that's a very good sign.
We actually had a couple of guys that said they were flabbergasted to find out that in some areas the quotas are going to be increased. And, you know, and I guess maybe they should know that science doesn't want them to stop fishing.
Exactly.
Because you guys like to eat paca as much as we do, right?
Yeah. Right. I mean, I think that's a really good point, Mike, is you know, and it's been working, you know, one-on-one with the fishermen. Because what we really want to get across is that the scientists and the fishermen, we're all in the same boat, figuratively speaking. Yeah. You know, our job is to ensure that there's fish for the future. Mm-hmm. Your job as a fisherman is to catch fish to support your family. Our job is to use the education, the resources, and the cooperation with the fishermen to ensure that there's always fish for them to catch, for their children to catch, and their grandchildren to catch.
I have one burning question that I know everybody wants to know. In some of the areas that have been closed off, are there assessments made there too? In other words, somebody goes to, say, a place that's closed, and you're going to go out and fish it to see what's there anyway.
Correct. I mean, like you said in the beginning, fish don't know where they are.
Yeah.
And so for the survey, we collect data from all of the areas around the main Hawaiian Islands, irrespective of the management regime.
Yeah. I know back in the day, especially on the inshore fish, a lot of surveys were taken by divers. And what happens when a fish sees a diver, he splits. You know, sure. And so I do know that you have some ways when you're actually using the gear that you talked about of hooking the fish. But now I understand there's also some pretty good tacit ways to get a pretty good idea of the bottom with cameras, with technology.
Correct. Yeah, that gets to the, as I mentioned, this is a multi-gear survey. Yeah. And we talked about the first gear, which is the cooperative research fishing. Mm-hmm. And then the second gear type is what we call the MOUSE, the Modular Optical Underwater Survey System.
I knew it would have some long government
thing. It has to have
an acronym. Yeah, yeah.
Right. And so what
that's working for the government 101, I think.
Exactly.
Or science 101, yeah.
And so what that is it's a deep water camera system that we've developed here at the Pacific Islands Fisheries Science Center. And it uses very light sensitive machine vision cameras. So it can record without any artificial light down to about 1,000 feet.
Yeah, that's great. Right? Yeah.
And we know that most of the bottom fish tend to exist within a depth range of about 250 feet down to about 1,300 feet, give or take. So we can sample most of that depth range using this camera system. And the camera system is really neat because it has two cameras. So it's binocular vision, just like our eyes.
Yeah, okay.
And so with that, we can put the camera down on the bottom. We can see bottom fish, you know, that move in front of the camera. But we instead of just being able to see them, we can actually measure them. Because we have that what we call a stereo camera system, so we have binocular vision, so we can measure every fish that we see.
That's fabulous.
It's really neat. And then we also have an archive of what's in that particular location, so that, you know, if a particular video analyst isn't exactly sure what species it looks like, they can bring in somebody else come together.
You know, that is a big part of it, because I do know that when we talk about this gang, we talk the Deep Seven. There are actually other fish in that fishery. That are maybe rare or maybe not desirable, maybe not even consumed. For instance, if you find a bunch of big roy out there or a bunch of big tilapia out there, nobody wants to catch them.
Sure.
But they're still there. They're eating the same stuff as the puck are eating, right?
Right. And there are some of the, even within the Deep Seven, there are some that, you know, if you don't have the fish in your hand, they look very similar. You know, paca and kale kale, for example.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, so it's important to have that video archive. And also what it does is it gives us, like I said, another way of looking at what's in a particular area. Because just like you and any fisherman knows, you know, you can go to a particular area and you can put your hooks in the water. Yeah. And if you pull a fish out, that means there's a fish there.
Right.
If you don't pull a fish out, that doesn't mean that there isn't a fish there.
Okay, that would be most of the guys, well, there's no fish here because they don't want their ability challenged.
Right.
But it might be they're not eating shrimp today. They're going to take a damashi,
exactly.
or they want an ika, or they want you know a sabar. They want something else.
Exactly. I mean, the bite's on or the bite's not on, and that has a lot to do with, you know, whether there are fish there or not, what the phase of the moon is, what the water temperature is, what the current's doing. You know, there are a myriad of different factors that affect whether a fish will take a hook. So with the camera systems, we can put the cameras down, and we can see whether there are fish there, whether they're biting or not.
That's wonderful. And by the way, Dr. Ben Richards is the fishery biologist, right now in this, and mentioned before what we're talking about, this survey, if you will, starts in next month.
Yeah.
And it goes for how many months?
Yeah, so the fishermen will start fishing for us August 15th.
Yeah.
Pending the weather.
Yep.
And then they'll fish all the way up through Halloween, through October.
Hey, by the way, I'm glad you said pending the weather, because I know these guys that love to fish. And there's a big difference going to fish because you want to fish. And if you're a commercial guy, going to fish because you have to fish. And they get out there and they put up with an awful lot of. So that means that these guys are cutting into their ability to earn at their normal rate by participating in the survey, knowing that, you know, if you want to fish tomorrow, you better find out what you got today. Is that a pretty good assessment?
Yeah, I think that's a good assessment. And you know, we do compensate them for their efforts.
Sure, of course.
You know, so we want to make sure that they're getting paid for the work that they're doing, because they are taking time out from their lives and from their livelihood, you know, to help us and to help themselves and future generations.
When you mentioned the gear, once again, gang, if you're just joining us, Dr. Richards was talking about the gear, meaning that everybody uses sort of a similar basket, even though a lot of you may use different Ahu lines or different things, different diameters, different colors. You try to make it all standard. And I guess that's because science really wants to have everything fairly standard.
Yeah, that's really, you know, one of the tenets of science is always trying to reduce uncertainty and, mm-hmm. and control yeah. what you can so that you can get what we call the best signal to noise ratio. You know, we want to make sure that, you know, if fisherman A catches a certain amount of fish in area A and fisherman B catches a certain amount of fish in area B, we want to make sure that those, you know, we do everything as possible to make sure that we're confident that those differences are actually due to differences between the two areas, not differences in how the fishermen are fishing, what baits they're using, what hook size they're using, all sorts of things. So we want to, it's called standardization, and that's what we're really trying to do.
But now that you're working with these guys and this thing is coming up, are there still bragging rights involved? Do they still compete with each other? Hey, I caught 19 today, man. What did you catch?
Oh, always.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, I mean, we're all out there, you know, to do our best. Yeah. And I think that's really important.
You know, I remember, and I'm sure you do, Raiders of the Lost Ark, when they finally found the Covenant and they put it in the storage facility, there was this underground cavern with 50 million things in it. And it's the hope that these surveys and these programs that get done don't just go get filed somewhere. So let's talk about not only the reason why the survey is taken, but who are the users? Who are the intended, you know, the recipients of the wonderful information you're going to supply?
Certainly. Well, the end goal is, of course, you know, that the fishermen and the general public reap the benefits.
WPCouncil.org, that's where you'll see it, or the NOAA site. We'll talk about that in a minute.
But as you mentioned, you know, working with the Western Pacific Regional Fishery Management Council, we as the Pacific Islands Fisheries Science Center, we're responsible for conducting the scientific scientific studies to create the scientific information that's used by the managers to set catch limits.
Yep.
So, you know, as we mentioned, the 2016 bottom fish survey, mm-hmm. the data from that survey was incorporated as part of the most recent 2018 bottom fish stock assessment.
Right.
And that stock assessment is produced by the Pacific Islands Fishery Science Center, and it is used by the Western Pacific Regional Fishery Management Council as one of the sources of information that they use to make their management recommendations
By the way, those management recommendations to NOAA is indicative of the commitment that NOAA has made to the fisheries that they are involved in, because it's not Big Brother telling you as much as it is sometimes Big Brother asking you. So you get the information, and then there's a series of meetings to discuss if there are going to be changes in quotas or seasons or limits, that here's your opportunity to learn why and know about it. Is that accurate?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. Yeah, I would say that was accurate. I mean, you know, we as scientists, you know, we have an interest in making sure that, to the best of our ability, management decisions are made based on sound science.
Okay.
But there are also many other considerations that go into a management decision aside from just the science. We feel that the science is quite important, but there are also other things that can come into play.
Yeah. Okay, so that means that when you finally put your John Henry on the top of this thing that you're going to be passing along, that you have not only the confidence but expectations that, okay, we've done the work, now the ball's in your court.
It is a constant conversation back and forth. You know, we try to do our best to answer the questions that the managers have, and we do our best to try to provide them with all the information that they may need to make good decisions.
Yeah. Okay, now that being said, I want to make sure that people that are just joining us, this survey is actually going to start in August, so it's right around the corner.
Yeah, there are two portions of the survey. As I said, the fishermen will start in August, and then we will be going out on the NOAA ship Oscar Alton SETI starting in the middle of October, October 15th through the 31st. That's when we'll be going out on the big white ship deploying the camera system. So if you see, you know, the big white NOAA ship, you know, off of Kauai, or
they're not fishing.
Right. We're doing the camera portion of the operations. But if you see the big NOAA ship, you know, people always are asking, you know, hey, what's it doing out there? What are we doing? And so what we're doing is we're doing the camera portion of the survey, where we deploy teams of scientists in small 19-foot research vessels, and they spend the day just deploying camera systems through these grids, leapfrogging one after the other for 15 days.
And you know what? I've actually found out in previous programs that there is a growing interest in the opportunity to join that community, the scientific community. I do know that through the scholarships and through the endowments and through the programs that the council does, that it's equally interesting that NOAA is probably having this recruitment effort from the bottoms up in areas where people are. I mean, you are the exception in my. You've been here a long time now, so you're here. I mean, you know, and that, but that means that sometimes our young people feel obligated to go somewhere far away and into a fishery that they don't know anything about. I'm kind of interested in the number of scientists that work with you that have had to ramp up and learn about this fishery that didn't know about it before they got here.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, certainly an issue whenever you move to a new area. You know, you want to make sure that you learn as much as you can mm-hmm. about a particular fishery or a particular area of interest before you start making assumptions. And so, yeah. you know, we at the Pacific Islands Fishery Science Center, like you mentioned, in terms of bringing, you know, more young people into the world of fisheries management and fisheries science, we have a number of internship programs mm-hmm. that run throughout the summer that bring in, you know, high school students, college yeah. students, graduate students, you know, to start learning about our fisheries here in Hawaii.
Yeah, and some of those kids are the ones that were in here, gang, from the last Fishers Forum, that every time I go and MC that thing, I put the hook in a few of these folks from different places to come in and talk. And I'm constantly amazed at the willingness. Actually, it's the opportunities that a lot of these people have, because if they get selected for an internship or a scholarship, they're going to get a job. They're going to get a pretty good. They're going to have a good life if they stick to it. That being said, let's make sure that people understand that there's a myriad of stuff. I always push WPConsul.org, but Noah, you guys got just this exploding value of stuff on the internet. That must be another place where certainly portions of your assessment, if not the whole thing, are going to be available.
Certainly, yeah. And Noah is going through, you know, at the federal level, a big sort of overall website redesign right now. Mm, but yeah. I would certainly, you know, encourage people yeah. to go to, you know, NOAA.gov yeah. and, you know, search for...
Click around. You can just search around.
Yeah, there's a whole wealth of information there. You can always, you know, search for Pacific Islands Fishery Science Center, get a whole slew of information yeah. about what's going on.
By the way, when I'm writing my columns, gang, I'm always plugged into that. There's a myriad of information, and particularly if you are a teacher or you're trying to do something literally, the materials out there are just boundless. I mean, in that it's available is magic.
It really is.
That used to be pretty close to the best stuff.
Yeah, the information yeah. age is an amazing thing. And I will also point, you know, especially for teachers out there, NOAA does have what we call the Teacher at Sea program.
Yeah.
And so what we have is we have, you know, on various of these research projects and research expeditions that we go on, we'll have a high school teacher or yeah. a college teacher out with us who is incorporating the work that is being done out on the research expedition into yeah. their classroom curriculum.
Okay, so those of you that have been listening, the survey that's going to start, and it's going to start in a few weeks in August. It is going to be what's going to be coming out in the, I guess, in the spring. It takes about 6-8 months for this thing to be published.
Yeah. So yeah, when we get yeah. back from the survey, we've got to go through and analyze all of the videos.
Pretty tough task. Yeah.
We have you know, 4 video analysts that sit in a dark yeah. room 8 hours a day yeah. for about 3 months.
Yeah, and they need 55 gallons of popcorn because they're right. in there for the duration, right? Yeah.
And then we have to, you know, transcribe all of the data sheets from yeah. all of the observers and all the fishing vessels. So, yeah, that process yeah. usually takes about 3 to 4 months before we have that data together. Then we go through the data yeah. analysis yeah. portion, which is another yeah. 1 to 2 months. So, yeah, about 6 months from the end of the survey, we'll have results out.
Ben, it must be awfully cool when you guys are doing this, knowing how many hungry birds in the nest there are that are waiting for it. Because decisions have to be made. Let's make sure that people understand. Decisions that are made affecting quotas, seasons, bag limits, and all of these things. It's surveys like this that augment the ability to do it accurately and fairly.
Correct. You know? Yeah. It's really nice to know that the work that we're doing is important and needed. And it's really nice to be doing it in concert with the fishing community and with the fishermen. Because like I said earlier, we are all in the same boat.
Yeah. Okay. So that being said, I want to make sure that you understand again that although this portion of the program is sponsored by the Western Pacific Regional Fishery Management Council, they trusted me and Ben to do our thing. So I thank you, Doc, and hopefully we get together when this is done and take a look at it and say, all right, here's what we set out to do, and by golly, here's some pretty cool things we discovered.
That'd be terrific. Yeah. I'd love to.
Okay. And for those of you that want to hear something on the show, you know what to do. Drop me a line, themikebuckshow@gmail.com. How about that 1,000-pounder on the island of Kauai? Pretty exciting, huh? Second biggest fish caught there. That's a good one. Okay. So once again, if you want to hear something on the program, themikebuckshow@gmail.com. And you can also go to the Western Pacific Regional Fishery Management Council, that's wpconsul.org, and go through our archive shows. Have fun. We'll see you next time. Aloha.